the members can come with us, like this, so that those that will come to visit the area. I want to take the opportunity to welcome the department and led by the Deputy Minister and the Acting DCG. We have received the following apologies: Mr. Kruka, Mr. Maloy, Mr. Chomani, Ms. Kappa, and Mr. Paulson will be joining us later. They are running late. So this is the apologies that we have received. Probably the minister will be joining us later. And I want to take the opportunity to welcome all of you to this meeting. Today, the agenda will be focusing on the briefing on the small scale fisheries, the implementation of the small scale fisheries policy, and the department will brief this committee on issues that were raised by the fishermen, how they are handling those issues, and we'll be briefed on the preparation for February 2020, because we don't want to get surprised in 2020. So we need to follow the process as a committee. And I want to take the opportunity to welcome the minister. You're welcome, Minister. To meet you, we have already opened the meeting. So we're now going to hand it over, Minister, to the first committee to lead us in the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. And I agree, we were given for the present on the small scale in response to questions that were raised by communities, and give sort of an update on what has been done so far. So I'm sure we'll be doing that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The last time we appeared before the Portfolio Committee, there was a request that we need to present on the small-scale fisheries policy. We have broken down the presentation into three. The first presentation would deal with the small-scale fisheries policy in the main, and that will be given by Mr. Banda and Jodeni. The second one would be issues around the progress on matters that were raised by the Portfolio Committee and raised by the stakeholders within the industry that will be presented by the DDG, Madam Sifogazi Ndudani. And lastly, there would be a presentation that would be made on FRAP 2020, and that will be made by Madam Sue Middleton. And we will take off with the small-scale fisheries policy that will be presented by the DDG. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Member.
Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, DG, DG Fisheries Management, colleagues, good morning. My name is Hassan Njovini. I will be taking the Portfolio Committee through the progress that the department has made so far with respect to the implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy. Thank you. My apologies for that inconvenience. I'm not going to give a broad background, Honorable Chair, for sake of saving time. So my outline is introductions, mostly to Chinese setup objectives, progress on implementation process, as well as future. Fourth case of Chinese policy was developed as a response to an equality court order in year 2007. This court order compelled government to redress the inequalities suffered by traditional fishers who conducted fishing and fishing-related activities for many years as part of the customary practice. But these people were generally not given fishing rights. So the small-scale fisheries policy went through an extensive process of consultation with all relevant stakeholders under the oversight of National Economic Development and Labour Council Network. The primary aim of the small-scale fisheries policy is to provide redress and recognition of the rights of traditional fishers. Some important features of the small-scale fisheries policy include sustainable utilization of resources, sustaining livelihoods, poverty alleviation through economic development and job creation, and food security. Some key principles of the small-scale fisheries policy include community-oriented management, co-management of resources, and an allocation of the basket of species. The small-scale fisheries policy was adopted in year 2012, and it did set guidelines for formally establishing the small-scale fisheries sector. In year 2013, the small-scale fisheries policy implementation plan was finalized. The implementation plan estimated a five-year process and a total budget of 124 million. Accordingly, the Marine Resources Act had to be amended to accommodate the small-scale fishing sector. Marine Resources Amendment Bill was extensively consulted on and was signed into law by the President in May 2014. Extensive consultation was done on the draft small-scale fisheries regulation, which was based on the small-scale fisheries policy. Feedback was provided to NEDLAC on these regulations. Small-scale fisheries regulations were approved by the Honorable Minister and Honorable President promulgated the amended Marine Resources Act in March of 2016. This allows the department then to proceed with the small-scale fisheries policy implementation process. Now I'm going to touch on the small-scale fisheries sector objectives. These include creating a sustainable, equitable small-scale fishing sector, also to secure the well-being and livelihood of small-scale fishing communities, maintain the health of marine ecosystems, uplift fishing communities by providing appropriate support mechanisms, education and training, infrastructure, and participatory management practices, communities and government communities near shore marine resources was one of the objectives, as well as that of taking fundamental human rights and marine living resources principles and international obligations into account. Lastly, also give due supporting in certain interests of women, disabled people, and child-headed households. That's from calendar year 2016. The progress was as follows. As I have said, the amended Maritime Resources Act was promulgated in March. Regulations were approved same month. Expression of interest were closed in April. At that time, we had 316 registered communities along the entire coastline. Then the registration was conducted in the four coastal provinces between March 2016 and August 2016. The social coral basin survey was conducted for all communities between March and August 2016. Verification and assessment was also conducted in all coastal provinces during the period between March and August 2016. That was followed by announcement of provisional list of successful officials that now apply with respect to Northern Cape as well as Western Cape, that was in October. And then in the Eastern Cape, that happened in November. Then that was followed by the appeals process in the three coastal provinces, Northern Cape, Western Cape, and the Eastern Cape. And then appeals were assessed in the Northern Cape in October. This is just a map showing the geographic spread as well as the concentration of the 316 communities that were registered in the process. You can see the picture is giving a different narrative in terms of the activities with respect to marine fisheries. It's not only on the Western Cape. And the registration and verification in terms of figures now, four coastal provinces took part, 5 months of community work, 55 DAC officials, as well as 60 individuals from different service providers that were commissioned by the department, 316 communities took part, then around 22,601 number of people who were registered. In 2017, the current calendar year, concluded appeals process for Northern Cape and provided recommendation en route to Honourable Minister, announced provisional list for KwaZulu-Natal in May, consulted on proposed fee structure for small-scale fisheries sector in June, finalized social economic baseline for Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, as well as KwaZulu-Natal, conducted appeals process for KZN, in May and August, assessed West Coast, Western Cape as well as Eastern Cape appeals application in August 2017. Now this is the future work. At the top there, top left, is the activity today is announcing final successful list for Northern Cape communities. This was started in October, and that was end of October and very early in the current month. Then the registration of Northern Cape cohorts, that work should be initiated this month. Right allocation for Northern Cape cooperatives, December. And conclude appeals for Western Cape and Eastern Cape communities this current month. Announce final list for Western Cape and Eastern Cape, December to January 2018. Establish and register Western Cape and Eastern Cape cooperatives. We target to do that in February 2018. Then that will be followed by the assessment of appeals applications for KwaZulu-Natal communities, which is starting this month. Also commence the right allocation of Western Cape and Eastern Cape cooperatives in March 2018. Announce finalists for KwaZulu-Natal next month, December, then register and commence right allocation for KwaZulu-Natal cohorts, March 2018. Finalize all right allocation appeals. We target to have that done by June 2018. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Can we have the other presentation, then we'll discuss the them both at the same time. Thank you very much. Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Member. I will go through the next presentation that seeks to clarify progress made so far with regard to the grievances. In resolving the grievances that were brought about by the fishing community. I will just go through the introduction quickly and feedback that seeks to address what are the things that we have been able to do, and I will touch as I go through on some challenges that we still encounter. On the 25th of November 2016, the fishing communities presented a list of grievances to the portfolio committee that were relating to the implementation of the small-scale fishing policy on issues that they were not entirely not happy about. The portfolio committee listened and considered these grievances and gave the department the task to go back and look at these issues. I will summarize on table one what the grievances were and what did we do about the grievances. Also to note, honorable members, is that not all of the grievances at the department were things that we could be able to address. So where it says not applicable, but I will quickly explain why it is not applicable for the department to do something about such a grievance. And we have put on this list on table one at the time frame in terms of us responding on these grievances. The first grievance related to the 10 years experience that was considered too long for a criteria for people to participate under small scale. We think that it's not applicable because, unfortunately, we are implementing a policy that became as a result of a court order of 2007. And that court order was responding specifically to certain grievances that were brought about at that time. So when the policy was developed together with the fishing communities that were part of the process, it was a predetermined criteria that we must look at those people who have been fishing for close to 10 years of experience, because it was seeking to identify the bona fide fisher. So this is the criteria that we inherited through the process, and unfortunately at this time of implementation it is not possible to change the criteria, but we are saying what DAF is ensuring now is to make sure that even though people did not make the cut because they lack the 10 years experience, does not necessarily mean they cannot participate. They can be members of the community cooperative, whether employed in the cooperative itself, whether it's a primary or it's a secondary or it's at a tertiary level. Because what we're seeking to do is not only to catch, but to catch, to process, and to market. So those people can be accommodated throughout that line of chain. The issue of minimum years of 18 years, again, that was a predetermined criteria. Unfortunately, we are not able to change that criteria at this stage. But as well, we are saying those that are under 18, we will make sure that they are accommodated one way or the other through the value chain of participation. The issue around the three-year duration, that the complaints that the small-scale fishing rights are 3 years, while the commercial are 15 years. And we explained this to the honorable members that it was not the case. It was just a perception. What has happened was that we were wanting to take a precautionary approach because we are implementing the small-scale fisheries policy for the first time. And if you are from the beginning of it, you confer it to be 15 years, and you have problems with that particular cooperative, government cannot exit if there are problems. And we took this because in the interim relief period, we had a lot of complaints of people that were participating that were not meant to participate. There were others that were accusing each other of wrongdoing. So we said we take a precautionary approach so that we say 3 years. But if we find that in the 3 years, all things are going well,
then we confer that cooperative to be 15 years. What we have then done in this case, Honorable Travis and Honorable Members, was to then ask the Minister to sign a document that confirms that this is a precautionary measure, and once all things are going through, then a confirmation will be that these are 10 years. So in essence, the rights are 15 years and they are not 3 years. The second issue related to the lack of sufficient focus on the youth, and it was talking on terms of how do we ensure that we bring the youth on board, we capacitate that youth that is incapacitated, we do training for people for free going and everything. In this instance, we are working with the Marine Stewards Council, MSC. We have been engaging them for a very long time. That's the reason why we have not put it here, because it was only yesterday they sent us in the evening a confirmation email that they are going to be working with the department in looking at providing some kind of bursaries in marine-related fields of people and kids that come from within these fishing cooperatives and within these fishing villages. So it is something that we have been working hard on, and we are happy that finally they are on board with that one. We are also engaging other partners to facilitate the youth development program. And I can safely say Woolworths is one of the partners that is coming on board very, very well, not only to develop the people, but also to procure the fish directly from these community cooperatives. And this is work in progress. And we are saying here, once the rights are allocated, when the cooperatives are formed, then it will be easy to tie the cooperative itself to the partners that we are working with in this case. The other issue related to an insufficient focus on the vulnerable groups, and what we have done was to amend the constitution template of the cooperative so that it has specific focus on particularly social responsibility for child-headed households and those vulnerable groups, so that within the community cooperative itself, the constitution is such that it gives credence and preference in terms of how we're going to do that. So once the cooperatives are formed, we will be able then to craft in detail how those programs can be able to be rolled out. The next one related to the lack of intra-governmental support in implementing the small scale policy. Now, in this issue, we are really looking at an establishment of a forum that is going to be intergovernmental. For now, we have been talking to other government departments. We've been talking to DTI. We've been talking to Department of Small Business. We've been talking to the Department of Social Development, because a couple of these people that are going to be participating in this are beneficiaries in the social grants, and trying to look at maybe ways and possible means of weaning them out of the social grants once the cooperatives are up and running and they've got some kind of valuable economic growth that they have within their cooperatives and some economic sustainability, so that those people then they are weaned out into that. So there's various discussions that we are doing with various departments. We don't have tangible commitment so far, but we are continuing these discussions so that we can see what it is that we can harvest out of it. The other issue related to the cooperatives being too restrictive, we are saying here there is not much that we can do, because we are following the prescribed DTI cooperative way of doing things. So there is very much little that we can do, unfortunately, in this manner. The next one relates to the MTAs and how the marine protected areas are disadvantaging the communities in terms of how they can harvest and where they can harvest. This is one of the very thorny issues, and it's one of the not so easy issues to be dealing with, because we are having the Department of Environmental Affairs has a target, and this is a biodiversity international target, that all countries by 2025 should have secured at least 5% of their coastline should be declared as MPAs. So there's an international target that the Department of Environmental Affairs is chasing. But the challenge is that as us as a development state, we are not necessarily in a position to attain this 5%. So there's a little bit of a competition, if you were to say, in terms of conservation and declaring these NPAs, and in a way of opening these NPAs such that there is livelihood that gets supported with this. I'm happy to report that DEA has recognized that in South Africa we cannot attain 5%, because if you are to close 5% of our coastal line, I mean, it's the poor that reside next to these communities from Northern Cape until KwaZulu-Natal. So they have agreed to reduce the rate of this NPA. We have not agreed on the percentage. We are still engaging with DEA, but I could say there is reasonable understanding from the DEA point of view that we need to open this. The biggest challenge that we are sitting with here is the environmental groups, because the portfolio committee, honorable members, will recall that Minister last year did engage with DEA, and Minister Zobwana and Minister Edna Muleo agreed on an opening of an MPA that was in Sisigama. And only 2 months later, there was a litigation that was brought to the Department of Environmental Affairs by the environmentalists that were claiming that this must still remain closed and everything. That court case has been ongoing, and because the court case was ongoing, we had to suspend any fishery that was happening within that MPA at the time. So these are some of the challenges I thought it's worth to indicate, that in as much as there is willingness from the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries and DEA, but we have other issues that we have to be managing, and we are trying to work around those issues to manage them. The lack of marine resources available for small scale, this related to the issue that was termed the empty basket of species and the vulnerability of the species that the small-scale fisheries cooperatives are going to be harvesting. We indicated to the honorable members that we would prioritize the allocation of the West Coast Rock Lobster and Abalone when we consider the small-scale fisheries community cooperatives. We have done that. We have allocated 428 tons of the West Coast Rock Lobster for the small-scale fisheries policy. And again, this issue brought about another range of protests, because what we did was to say, if we are to avail the resource, obviously it's a depletable resource, you have to cut it from someone. So on the near shore lobster allocation, we had to take 50% of the near shore allocation and reserve it for small scale. And what we also did was to cut from the big companies, something that has never been done ever in the history of the West Coast rock lobster, that you cut the allocation of big companies. So we cut it by 20%. But of course, we are getting lambasted that we have cut 2 lakh. But I'm saying we have never cut even 1% before. So we have now cut 20%. And again, you have to find this balance, because you may not be able to cut completely from the big companies and you say you are giving it to small-scale fishing cooperatives, because they too maintain an economy. They too have jobs. They too, and you don't want the sort of to flip the whole scale completely. While you are trying to strike this balance. So what we have done was to take 50% of the nearshore allocation and to cut 20% from the big companies. And that resulted to about 428 tons for the small scale on West Coast Rock Lobster. And on the Abalone, what we decided to do was to extend and not allocate the West Abalone, because we felt there were too many challenges that surround the Abalone, the issues of serious poaching, the issues of seriously organized syndicates. So we thought that we needed a little bit of time to rethink how we are going to do the allocation of Abalone and the accommodation for small scale. We agreed to amend Section 21 policy, honorable members, so that it provides a mechanism to transfer the rights from commercial to small scale fisheries policy. Why? The reason we did this was that, as we have indicated, once the rights are allocated, they are locked for the period of time they were allocated for. So if they are 8 years, they are locked for 8 years. So these rights that are of interest to small scale, honorable chair, they were allocated in 2013. Now, we cannot be able to take away those rights from those people, but what we said was that if there are companies, big companies, that want to transfer between themselves these We are not going to allow that a commercial company transfer to another commercial company a resource that is of interest to small scale, but rather we will encourage them to transfer them to the small scale fisheries cooperatives. This was to be done by July of this year. We have been able to have discussions, Chair, on this, but as I say, it is taking longer than we thought, because we have to get these companies to be in agreement, because in reality, they have a legal standing because their rights belong to them until such a time they come to expire. What we have been able to manage to do was to complete the Section 28 processes. So what we have done here, we have looked at those people that owned, received rights from 2013, and they have not utilized them. So they have not lifted their permits. They have not gone to sea to catch in 2013, in 2014, in 2015. And you're saying, if you are already in 2017, you have been given a right in 2013 and you have not utilized it, it's likely that you are never going to utilize it. So those people, we have issued them with Section 28, where we revoke the right and give it in, put it in the basket for the small scale. We've done that for the lionfish, about 95 rights that have been revoked on the lionfish. We have done that on the white mussel, we have done that on the oysters, and we have done that in various other species that are of interest to small scale. And the issue to reduce the TAE, which is the total allowable effort in the commercial sector to allow the small scale to fish, we are implementing this again in the West Coast Rock Lobster. When the fishing season begins, we are going to be reducing the effort to 4 months instead of 8 months, but so that we can be able to ensure that there is something that gets left for the small scale to harvest. And for the rights allocation of 2020, I think Ms. Middleton will talk about this issue, because there's various species that are due for allocation in 2020 that are of interest to small scale, and we want to do a considerable consideration for the small scale. Slide number 6, the grievance that related to or that people did not know about the registration process. On this one, honorable members, we feel that there may be very little that we can do to change this scenario, because as we indicated in another presentation we did to the portfolio committee, the extensive consultation and the venues, the dates that were published, we were on community radios, we were on a printed media announcing this. We are not disputing the fact that we may have missed some people, but unfortunately, we are saying where we are at now, unfortunately, we are not able to halt the process because people, some people say they did not know about the process. And what we have already done was to get those people, we have the names of those individuals or those groups that feel they did not know about that, and we are considering their cases on a case-to-case basis. The issue of people that did not appear on the provisional list deemed to be unsuccessful applicants, then we opened a period of appeals, and that period of appeals, I think as Afanda has presented, we have even dispatched government officials, the officials of the department, to assist the people who are lodging their appeals so that we make sure that people do understand how the process should be done. The issue about the appeals process being difficult, as we say here, not necessarily applicable, that is something we can change on it, but all that we did, as I say, was to dispatch our officials to assist the people who have to lodge these appeals, so that they take them through the process, assist them if it is to fill the information or to make them understand and explain the process to them. The other issue related to amagagasi or chinjo in the KZN period, I recall, honorable members, that we had made a presentation on this one in terms of that we could not be able to terminate the contract of amagagasi or chinjo. The honorable member gave us an assignment to look at the possibility of the termination. We found that the termination was going to be too expensive. One, they could take us on because it's a legal contract that is valid for 3 years. But the second part of it is that financially the department won't be able to afford, because that clear contract has been having certain disbursements already. Now, if we cancel the contract with them, we cannot even be able to take back the money, and we must find another contractor, we must appoint a new contractor, and that will come at a cost of which the department does not have. So the compromise that we agreed to do with them was to swap them, because this related to a perception that was existing within the community where they were at, so that they agreed to swap so that they do the work from Mzamba, which is the part of Bizana, after Port Edward, so that they focus on that area towards this side of the coast, towards Port St. John's, so that the contractor that was going to be working on this side of the Eastern Cape, we swap them and we take them to KZN, so that at least we change the faces so that we deal with that issue in that way. The issue around the depletion of the marine resources, this one is a critical issue, and we have discussed about it a little bit in the previous portfolio committee, where we were saying these resources will never be enough and the basket will never be full. We need to be starting to looking at alternatives of how we supplement the fish, looking at alternatives like fish farming, for instance, look at alternatives like ecotourism within these community cooperatives, looking at alternative functions like boat building, net repair, and with boat building here, we're not talking this huge commercialized boat building thing, but the normal thing, if a motor breaks, a machine breaks, somebody that is there that can repair it, is nets break, because when they fish nets, they get lost or they break, they get torn. So that you look at net building, you can also be able to expand and look at activities that relate to bait preparation. Well, there's boat leaves to catch the fish, there must be bait that is within there. So you can have these other little economic activities being part of that to supplement the issues. The issue around the fisher security, to increase the engagement with partner organizations. And this issue, we are engaging very much robustly at this point in time with SAMHSA, which is the Southern African Maritime Safety Authority, so whereby we can identify what are the safety things that we can prepare for the fishers. But one of the good things that has happened, we have developed in the department, Mr. Abongile Ngongwa developed this app that is called the Abalobi app. And one of the things with that app, it is having a security function whereby the fishermen, as they will download this in their cell phone, it has got GPS coordinates. So wherever they are fishing, we can be able to track and know where they are. And this is going to come in very handy because in incidences of an very likely event, that the weather maybe goes bad, then you can be able to know at least the last position of the fisher at the time, maybe they reported an incident. Also, that is also going to assist us in terms of communicating to them. So this app has got also a weather focus. So fishermen, before they go out, they are able to download on that app to see what the weather focus is going to be, the wind speed, and the size of the current and everything. So these are some of the things that at least we are really trying to do within that thing. The other grievance related to the Eastern Cape abalone fishery that was set as an experiment, and there were very serious problems and issues that ensued. The DM was heavily involved in the discussions that were happening within this. We have undertaken a process of starting this as a new process so that we have a new experiment, because what the indication was that the 13 tons that they could be given, unfortunately, cannot be given as a fishing right, because we were running a fishing right process. So you cannot write another process outside of the process. So then this 13 tons is going to be part of an experiment, and that is going to be linked to the Nelson Mandela University. The reason why this needs to be an experiment is that in reality, we have not been doing much research on the east side of the coast. Our research is very much focused on the west side of the coast. So we know much at the west, but we know very little on the east. So the issue here is that we need to also ascertain how much available this fish stock of the abalone is, the extent it goes, so that we can be able to look at opening a fully-fledged fishery of abalone in the east coast. We do think that there is some sizable abalone there, but we do not know at what extent and how that is running. The issue of communication was a big issue. We have not really been very good in communicating and engaging with stakeholders. It's an admission that we have made to the honorable members, and it is an effort that we are continuously in the process of developing. I do know that maybe some honorable members do know that Minister has begun a community stakeholder engagement in the previous month. So we do have a plan now of doing a wider consultation and a wider communication at a ministerial level and at a departmental level. The issue, feedback on the process of resolving, I think, Honourable Chair, let me not take the portfolio committee backward here. These are just the details of what the issues that I have been talking about. I have talked to them already, the issues of security, the Eastern Cape, the communication plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DPG and the team. Honourable members, that was the presentation. Any indication in terms of questions and questions? Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Sultana, Honourable Sandale, Honourable Samba, Honourable State. Can you switch off the mic, DPG?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Greetings to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the Acting Director General, all protocol observed. Chair, let me start by commending the good work done by the departments. Thus far, the IP progress is on point, judging by the numbers. I believe that with such progress, the ultimate aim of redressing and recognizing traditional rights of fishers will be realized. I, however, hope that all future work is indicated on slide 11 will be achieved timely without much especially those whose deadline are on December 2017. Chair, zooming on FRAP 2020, on slide 8, my question is that, why do some of the fishery sector indicate that they are both optimal or depleted on their current status?
We are not discussing the 2020 first allocation for now. We are on small scale fishery funds.
On small scale fishery funds. Okay. Thanks, my apologies, Chair. On slide 8, where it relates to insufficient focus on youth, the buzzers by provided by the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, I think are an excellent idea towards youth development. But let us not forget that not all youth is academic. Perhaps an entrepreneurial youth program could assist in this regard. So that is my suggestion. And my question, Chair, now it's on the very same slide. I think to my question is now that the cooperative are registered. What kinds of support will they receive and for how long? I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mapapa. You know, I've said the last one because I assume members remember that only can't go beyond five. We've taken to 3 minutes commending. So that's why we allowed the two. So, Honorable Sultan, the rule of the game must be observed.
Straight to the point. Slide 6 of the first presentation. Progress on training. What progress has been achieved on training and appropriate infrastructure? Asking this question in the context of what has been presented to us, maybe still coming up in another report, then I would appreciate with that. And this becomes particularly important when you come to think about the security to which a lot of emphasis has been assigned in the last presentation. And then there's a slide which speaks to socioeconomic baseline things are done. My questions there are, what does it reveal? If this presentation has been done before, I would like to get a copy, but if it's not, then maybe we would get a taste of what it looks like. Particularly, I want to know how many families are entirely dependent on fishing for their livelihoods, and what rand value do we expect to be generated family by family. I'm referring here to one of the objectives, which says economic development, poverty alleviation through economic development and job creation. That's what I base my question on. Master Chair. On the second presentation, slide 4, duration of fishing rights. How often do you propose to review the performance and effects? It's 15 years. At what intervals would you say, let's review if these people are utilizing this and how is this performing? And then on youth involvement, what percentage will be allocated to the youth, you know, in these cooperatives? This becomes a sore point nowadays. And lastly, on the reallocation of rights from big companies, I've got here the Constitution, Section 25.1. No one may be deprived of property except in terms of a law of general application. And no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. Now, the rights that are being reallocated to the small scale fisheries. Principle, I agree, but if you check this, the constitutionality of what you are doing, that's the point. So that we don't end up with a court order and people say you have flouted Section 25.1 of the Constitution of the country. That's my take so far. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to know, has a study been done to see what sustainable utilization and sustainable livelihoods mean? And when you are making the allocation, and what will be economically viable for people to survive on? What is your opinion on this? And then, your inability to clamp down on the poaching in the different sectors, and I'm not only talking about abalone and West Coast rock lobster, but all the sectors, is largely to blame for the declining stocks and the reduced TAC. What is your opinion on the need to clamp down on this, and why are you not successful with this? Can you please share your thoughts on that? And you talk about the 95 rights that commercial line fishers had that they did not activate. Can you tell us how many was new entrants of those 95 rights? And how many were existing rights holders in that sector? And then the plans, as you present them here, they seem very very good. But your lack of communication has caused people to be very wary of what the partner says, because it seems like you are having a top-down approach to people. And, with people and communities that are poor and that have been promised a lot of things, they become very apprehensive about what the department says then. So, although you are offering your excuse or here, it is mainly the cause of most of the problems that are here. If you have presented these plans as they are here to the communities, I'm sure they would buy into them, because it sounds very good. And so I don't understand why there is such a big apprehension of this. And then the two sectors, the small scale and the nearshore commercial, what is your understanding of the difference between the two? Or are you wanting to collapse the two into each other? Because to me they are two separate and not the same sectors. And if you're wanting to create one sector out of the two, I can foresee a lot of problems. If that is what you are trying to do. But I would like to hear your thoughts on those things.
Thank you, Chair. Also, thanks for the presentation. Only two light ones. One is on that part of the appeals, which is interesting. The appeals are set. I was just interested to know these appeals, why it seems they are not done simultaneously in provinces. And then, if that's the case, why it should be. But now, at the same time, I would also like to know what is the trend in these appeals. And lastly, on the communication, the one which was a challenge in the department. Just some indications that this is going to be implemented and successful, since it was a challenge that we're trying to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, yes, I want to thank the department and the minister and the minister for coming back. It's a pity that the fishers are not here today, at least to hear that there is some progress. I have two or three questions, Chair. The first one is regarding the, that lot in KZN, and I will not try and pronounce the name. The KZN, the AMA, whatever, I might say a word that's not parliamentary, Chair, if I proceed any further. I want to find out whether the KZN community, the fishing community, has been informed of this. All good and well to come and tell us. We don't have to live there, and we are not the people that's upset about what happened there. Whether they have been informed of this and what is the response, because that was a community cry to us, Chairperson, that's the first one. And secondly, I'm looking at this and I know I'm always one of them that's confused with this fishing thing, because it's very confusing to me about small scale and near shore and this and that. The point is, Chairperson, I think we've been dealing with this since 2013, 14, 15, 16. And if I look at the presentation and the dates at the back here on slide 5 and 6 and 7 and to the back of that, fisheries dissemination forums and dates that need to be kept to. Do we have happiness in the fishing sector out there? I know there was a mention made about the communication that's not good enough and whatever. I think the one part of it is sitting and drawing up plans and have our own plans. The difficult part is actually sitting with communities and get people to agree to decisions being made. Because we can come up and say, okay, we're going to announce in October and we're going to announce in November and we're going to do these things. If you don't have the agreement with the fishing community, it's not going to help. And that's why I said it's a pity that the fishermen are not here today, so that they can also hear and that we can gauge the happiness or the unhappiness of the fishing communities in the process so far. Because the process will not work if we don't get the fishermen on board. And then lastly, Chair, I just want to find out on that, and I think that is part of making the communities happy.
what are we doing regarding training? And I must listen, I'm listening to the 10 years and under 18 and what and that, some of the things that causes unhappiness in the community. But I don't think we will have happiness if we don't start with something. So I want to find out on the other things, not going to see, it's about building the other things that you were mentioning, the people being part. Do we have a plan in place? Do we have funding in place, processes in place, to at least start with some kind of training or some goodwill from outside to show the community that something is happening on? The cooperatives, are they established? Are they there? Are they busy? Do they get training? Are they part of processes so long so that they can see there is some kind of something happening and not just, you know, talks and talks and talks and talks? Thank you, Chief.
I'm a person.
I'm a person. Thank you, good morning.
You're also called a DM. Welcome, honorable person. Because Dr. Jones for the report.
He thinks I'm going to ask that same question about why we're giving fishing allocations to people who don't know the difference from an AK-47 and a fishing rod. I'd like to know, in terms of the fishing rights allocation, what is the priority? Is the priority to satisfy these commercial fishing companies? Or if the priority is to take care of those deserted fishing communities, especially on the west coast, Overberg, because if you go to Saldana, what was once a thriving fishing community, you go to Howard Bay. Those places are dead now because this was their livelihood, and it's been taken from them, and it's been taken from them by this government. These are people that survived. If you go into the communities close to sea, Manenberg, Noble Park, and people, a large number of those people used to survive on the sea. Those people are unemployed and staying at home. Contributed to this dire socio-economic situation that we are in. And if we can't police a white crime, it's never going to happen. We can't even send the army in, it's never going to happen. But what we can do is address that structural matter of unemployment. These are fishing communities, they survived on fishing. Care of the families, school was what they. So I'd like to know, is there a willingness of this department to make sure that we restore that once thriving community, fishing community, with their livelihood? That's the one question. And the other question is, going into those communities that we would like to invite to apply for fishing allocations, do we go and on road shows? Because this is a very important part of the economy of the Western Cape. People that survive on the sea and their livelihood. So do we go and roadshows and get communities to make application? And also where communities or interested parties who have lived experience on the sea and have worked for others, do we have a plan to empower them? Or we always want them just to be working for others and making other people rich? But we need to get empowered when it comes to the fishing. Thank you very much, Shepard.
our good officials. Chair, first of all, I wish to apologize for arriving late. I was caught up in the traffic jams before quarter 8. That's I have indeed missed the bulk of the presentation, Chair. I wish to welcome the department's presentation that indicates the process of community consultations that the minister has embarked upon. I wish to urge the department, the ministry, the DA included, to rapidly, I don't want to use the word quickly, extend the consultation to the Overberg. Minister would know there are matters that has not been completed, if one can put it like that, commitments made, it hasn't been somehow been implemented, I said. Chair, I have been recently summoned to a meeting of Kashi's Bai. I'm saying summons, Chair, because the community called upon me and said I have to come, otherwise there's going to be a protest action. Chair, it pains you to sit in a meeting with people at your age and older, that love of the sea all their lives, that are saying to you that we have been fishers, we have been part of the interim relief, we have just been kicked off. Show your communication chain between themselves and department officials, questioning why there are two lists that have been submitted, chair, and get no real explanation to why they are on the one list that the department accept, not coming from their representative, official representative, that list is the one that will be implemented and not the other list. In that way, depriving fishermen, families from their livelihood, chair. What do we do in those kinds of instances, chair? Because it seems that there are officials who are the judge and the jury, chair. They are the ones who decide who have an income and who not, chair, without any reasonable explanation to anyone, chair. That is the one issue that I wish to raise. Chair, secondly, one welcomes the issue of the cooperatives and targeting in particular vulnerable groups. I raised the issue of disabled people before, Chair. The challenge is, the question that one asked, Chair, is there a program in the department who says, who tries to address those who are unsuccessful, who are part of these marginalized, these vulnerable groups, in getting them, organizing them into a cooperative? Or is it the department's wish that those must form themselves into a cooperative? Because if there's no one in the department taking the lead, taking the community by the hand, giving those options, explaining those options to the community, guiding them into fulfilling them, then it's just going to be a pipe dream. So we need to concretely work towards implementing the things that we want, that we said we need to implement, Chair. Chair, I am the DDG knows wherever we meet on the side, I ask the very same question, Chair, and she always gives me the very same answer, you know. And the answer has always been, has this one not come back to you as yet? I will make sure that that one gets back to you. And I'll, without saying the word, the question, I'm expecting her to respond to the day, to say, I will make sure that they come back. I have not received. Chair, the point I'm making, the Minister and DM, is that there were action taken by the department when there were complaints by commercial fishers, Chair, and without giving an iota of thinking towards the affected fishermen, how the change in the permit will affect them, not consulting with them. The permit was changed. I'm talking about a headline fisherman, Chair. It was changed. We've been, and this change was brought about the 1st of May last year. We've had meetings with the ministry around that, the DDG, this processes. The ministry, in actual fact, spoke to that in the last meeting, Chair, in Strasbourg. But to date, nothing has changed. It clearly says to the fishermen, poorest of the poor, who makes a living, who survive, they are survivors, Chair. Telling them, if there's a complaint, an issue coming from the commercial sector, we will immediately attend to it. Even if it means we must sacrifice you in the process, but we must satisfy the commercial entities. And that, to me, Chair, is wrong. It cannot happen like that. You know, Chair, the commercial entities have the ability to go into how many 100, 200 nautical miles into the sea. You know, they in actual fact can also apply to go to Namibia. We have an agreement with Namibia, Chief of the Water of Namibia. These fishermen are dependent on the near shore, Chief. They cannot mount on back onto a boat and go into the deep sea and make a living, Chief. But yet, they are the ones who are literally being shortchanged when it comes to that, Chief. So I certainly hope that the consultation will reach the shores, the communities of Kasisbaai, Strasbourg, Worston, Kleinmond, Gansbaai, Bubbeljacht, by very, very soon, Chair. Those are desperate communities, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mandela. The issue of biosecurity, Minister, and Vice President, and the Gama not being open. Can the Minister make commitment that we follow up the matter with the Department of Environment? because this committee has visited the community and they are desperate to utilize that area for food security and for fishing and food security issues. Secondly, these are the fishermen have arrived on our state. They are coming in the neighborhood. The second issue on I believe, Minister, if we can, we must not actually discuss issues of climate change outside the poverty and the condition of our people in this country. These forums of NGOs who pressurize our country to exclude our people, continue to exclude our people on the basis of them entertained by this, the resources of the people. Cannot work like that way. We have to continue to engage the environmental department, the minister. I think from our side, we'll engage the portfolio committee on environment because it's a problem. And this brings the issue of climate change issues. Let's contextualize these issues in a proper manner and develop mitigation strategies and adaptation, but in that context of addressing poverty in our country, it cannot be outside that, because our people cannot wait for that things to happen. But it must accommodate them. The environment must actually assist our people to go out of the poverty. It shouldn't be the other way around. The second issue is on the support packages. I heard the DG talk about talking social development and others. But I want the minister to bring the DTI social development and the minister of small business together so that the package is to support this community are comprehensive. The training thing, the Minister of Cooperatives is doing training. We have to duplicate that. So let's have all these ministers coming together and supporting those communities. I think this is needs that proper intergovernmental agreement from those departments. I'll ask that we get a confirmation from our side in terms of the composition of your cooperation, because the composition must be in line with the constitution of the republic, where women who are in majority in this country are getting their share. They should not be excluded because I can see people talk about youth. There are women who are citizens of this country who are many in their numbers and they are voters. So we should have that composition balance in line with our constitution. The last thing is the you know, the reduction of commercial vis-à-vis the basket of the small producers. I agree that it must be balanced, but we must be in cognizance that people are hungry. They must get food. They must get their shape. And I think that forum, Minister of Transformation, is indeed needed for us to be able to talk transformation. We don't just reduce for the sake of reduce. We must reduce looking in the context, but at the same time making sure that we sustain the sustainability and continue to contribute towards the economy of our country. So they must go together. They shouldn't be this being prioritized than other ones. Minister, you can respond.
Thanks, Chairperson. Now, I think ODM and anybody will comment, but I'm sure the answers will come from the presenters. But I'm taking on issues we have raised in closing. The issue of biosecurity and the Gama communities, and how do we work with the Department of DI in such that those processes are late to us. I know I agree with you that there was before then an agreement that a portion of the Gama would be open for small scale fishermen so that they can be able to access fish and for their livelihoods. We will follow up on that and check how far is the case. Because it's true, when these MTAs are formed, the ideas and the reasons are good, but when they are already formed, there is a reluctance and these court cases by the environmentalists would always believe that fish has to be left alone. And I think those are things, and that is to be done vis-a-vis the improvement of community livelihoods, the issue of climate change, not to be in isolation, and also the composition of the cooperatives, reflective of our demographics as well as the role of women. So those are things we come back and the need to fast track
the commission of the Fisheries Transformation Forum to deal with some of these issues. And I'm sure we will be, through DDG, we will be getting the responses to some of the questions raised by the honorable members.
So thanks, Chairperson. As I'm sitting here, I remember very well that I grew up eating fresh fish caught by myself from the sea. Walking from where I grew up is 5 km from home to the sea. And very healthy. I must admit, I didn't know much illegalities and legalities at the time, except that what you call receiving by the Muslims. I knew they were restricted and the skupash, the dry fish or the east, whatever. But fish, the things like shares and all that we use using fish line, really grew up eating fresh fish. I take that on the statement that I've just raised of the present national situation and the hunger and starvation of our people. That will have to be really measured. We can't just have hungry people to death because environment says no. Maybe it goes back to Mr. Van Dam, Mr.
Van Dalen.
That scientists will have to help us. Scientists will have to really help us. And we need to get this balance of human beings and nature. They must help us. There is this scary figure of 14 million South Africans that go to bed without food. Well, I'm told it has gone down, Minister, it's 13.7. Which it doesn't matter, 13.7 million people. That's the population of many African countries, which means the entire country goes to bed without food. We really need to do to get that balance. Maybe from the side of leadership, I hear Madam Chair saying officials, meet this department. I think from the leadership, we do need some kind of imbezos and coming together, balancing that thing of human beings and nature. I agree it must be balanced. But it looks like, especially the NGOs, to me they don't care about what happens to the communities. So long the Atacama fish grows, so long this tree is there and all that. So that's that. But that leads me to the next point. The intra is intergovernmental and intra, but inter. I agree with you. Maybe the minister or the ministry will have to lead to call together those departments. By the time the officials engage, there should have been a political roadmap. There are a few of those departments. Your dear, ourselves, social development, public works. Public works has got so much to play around this infrastructure public works. I think sometimes rural development could be there. So just coordinate, and then we give the officials that this is what they need to follow. How can I forget? How can I forget DTI? Because this financial muscle of these things will be with DTI most of the time. Determining out of other departments, that's a problem. They'll determine out of other departments. But I must admit that new Deputy Minister, was very meeting. There is a lot of will at the meeting with the DTI and DAF at the present moment, which I hope it will culminate on this one.
the last response, I think it will be a permanent comment or question from members, especially Mr. Van Dam, and our response, especially from me using my background, of how much staff can put in terms of the protection of this basket, your upper loan. That will be forever limited. That's why this, most of the Nicaraguan, like, don't shake my head. Because it's your understanding, my understanding, we're trying to find each other here. My understanding, it will be forever limited. And then it will go and pass to the constitutionally obliged department. To the constitutionally obliged. Why I would agree with you, how much coordination is taking place there? Because one thing becomes a crime, there is constitution pronounces itself that there will be South African police that across the board. So I agree, we can do this, but at a certain given, but I, for instance, Madam Chair, police have helicopters, police have these small boats of chasing criminals on the sea, or speed boats and all those kinds of things. Which means at a certain given point, we need to coordinate and do both. Yes, let's do, but it ends there, and those that's responsible, they take over. I sit here and I say to myself, we can't do it to the end without inviting those that are responsible. Maybe it's another area of coordination and coming together. I do have a little bit of experience with my previous life on this thing. Maybe working on those things, it can work better. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the input that came from honorable members. Minister and Deputy Minister have already responded to some of the questions that were raised, and my colleagues will respond to the issues around, firstly, on the small-scale fisheries policy and lastly on the issues that have been raised. But I thought I should pick up on a few that were raised by honorable members. Honorable Mapanga, the issue around the entrepreneurial youth intervention is a worthy input that we will explore because it will start to then expand on the interventions that we are having around the youth and how the youth will then be joining around the marine space that we are having. As the DDG was presenting on the issues that we had, she spoke about the Marine Stewardship Council that is responsible for most of the interventions that we are having. But there are also interventions that we are having within the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in terms of the academic training of the youth, where we spend almost 23 million on a yearly basis just for training across the agriculture, forestry and fisheries space to ensure that. And as we presented the last time around, and having gone on what DM would always say, that we have got only one fish bed, there has been an intervention to also expand on the number of vets that we are having by linking up with international organizations to train our vets. That will also go to what Honorable Fildani had asked in terms of what are the other interventions that we are having for training and capacity building within the space. Honorable Van Dalen, I think the DM has responded to the issues that you have raised around the crime, especially poaching. And just to add, to say that poaching is just but one of the fisheries crime that you are having. It has become a multifaceted approach to deal with fish crime to an extent that without not only national cooperation, if we do not have international cooperation, we will suffer as a country without doing this. I've just come back from a case that was held in jail where the South African resources were plundered in the past and trying to repatriate that kind of money. the interlinkages that you see in terms of how the crime was committed is something that would not be able, will not be able to achieve if there is no international cooperation on dealing with the issues of crime, especially fish crime in this matter. And our commitment in terms of our alignment with international bodies, the regional bodies, is best to deal with the issue of this fish crime, which is international, I have got to say. We make an admission, Honorable Chair, that the communication gaps that we have identified in terms of our stakeholder relations, in terms of our interaction with the people on the ground, has led to a lot of upheaval within the fisheries industry. As indicated, Minister has already taken lead in terms of engagement with communities, and we are looking at strengthening our stakeholder relations so that the communities know what the department is thinking, so that we don't get surprised when things go awry. There were a few issues that were raised here. I think Chair was saying the composition of cooperatives, really women, and Honorable Fildani was indicating really the youth. We will be able to submit that information in terms of what are the current compositions in terms of the cooperatives later on. And we will also submit the socio-economic analysis that was done to determine the baseline that Honorable Fildani asked about. I will then, Chair, with your permission, hand over to DDG Ndidani and Ndate Afana, just to give the details in terms of the technical issues that were raised by honourable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Let me give to your DG. No, I don't know the spokesperson of the minister and the head of communication of the department. Who are those? Never seen them on TV or paper. Who are those people? Just for my interest sake, as we are talking about this communication thing. Responding, I was asking them.
But those three never responded to any of the issues I raised. Those three were leading the department, never responded to any of the issues. They're talking about stuff that don't matter here. The communities of the Cape Flats have been robbed of their livelihoods, giving us so much and these people are not responding to it.
They're
talking here about things that don't matter to the people in the communities.
They are not finished responding, Honorable Paulson. So I was just asking the... No, I was asked, I interjected them, was the DG has handed over to the DDG. I said, I remember that I've never seen these people called spokesperson. So I just wanted to remind myself.
I've never seen these two in...
DDG? DM and Paulson. Can you go outside, Paulson. Thank you, Honorable Member. We will just respond on the technical issues. We will divide this between ourselves. The FMDG has responded on Honorable Mapanga's issue, and I think the only issue that was left was with regards to the support that is being given to the cooperatives and how long will that support be. Unfortunately, Honorable Mapanga, I'm sad to say, it is unfortunate that the department or the branch fisheries has not enough budget. Our target was to give this assistance to the cooperatives for at least a period of 5 years. The reality is that we do not have the money and we do not have the people. There's only three people that are in the Directorate of Small-Scale Fisheries Implementation in the department. Three.
responsible for a coastline of 4,000 kilometers. Fishing communities that are over 300 with over 30,000 fishermen. This is the reality of the issue. So we would have loved to do a five-year support. Unfortunately, we have reduced it so far to 3 years. And that kind of a support that's going to be given is outlined in the guidelines of the small-scale fisheries policy. It's because the reality is that the bulk of the fishermen that we are focusing on in these cooperatives have never run businesses on their own. They've been either employed as skippers in somebody's vessel, or they've been either employed in somebody's factory and processes. So now they are going to be running businesses that belong to them. So there's a whole package in the business side of it to assist them on bookkeeping, assisting them how to monitor the prices. And this app I was talking about, the Abalobi app, is also having a function for them to find the best buyer. So what happens in that app, there is going to be a list of all the fishing communities, so you can find the selling price of your fish, whether Checkers will take it at a prime price, or Woolworths will take it at a prime price, or whoever other buyer that can take it. So it has got some infused functions to purely assist them, so that you limit them really having to do all the calculations by themselves. The department, again, I must stress, cannot do this on their own. As I said, we've got three individuals, and we are understaffed and we are under budgeted. So what we have done is to look at how and what the other government departments can provide. For instance, in the registration of the cooperative, the Department of Small Business are assisting us in rolling out that thing, because we can't do it ourselves. So we are looking at now for a period of 3 years, because that's the money we have for now, the money of about 3 years. And also we will be appointing capable service providers to assist them in doing that. It can be us, again, because as I say, we don't have the people and we don't have necessary expertise ourselves to be doing that. So we are still looking at a combination of ourselves with the money that we have to appoint the service providers. For Northern Cape, for instance, it has been done already. It's been a problem. And cast, oh yes, thank you so for that. Recently, we have had a discussion within the department as a whole. The acting DG was leading this discussion, and in terms of how does within CASP fisheries feature, because traditionally CASP money goes to agriculture-focused areas. It's very little that goes to fisheries and little that goes to forestry. So we are in the process now in the department itself to leverage some funding from CASP that can be purely set aside basically for that function. Let's say SMTG has responded to this. The issue, Honorable Sultana, around the training and infrastructure, you see on slide 6 of the first presentation, that is an objective of what the cooperatives are going to be focusing on. At this present time, there is not yet any training, because there is no cooperative as yet that has been established. As we say, Northern Cape is going to be the first one that is going to be, we're going to be rolling out this. The issue of infrastructure, DM has indicated that thing, public works plays a very critical role in the implementation of small scale and the success of it. There of course, the harbors, we are the users, public works owns the harbor. So in terms of what type of infrastructure that can happen, it's also going to be dependent on the partner we are bringing on board. Woolworths, for instance, they are willing to, as because they will be buying direct to the cooperatives, they are concerned about the quality of the fish, because the quality of the fish has everything to do with the price that you fetch of that fish. So they are interested in assisting the small-scale cooperatives, for instance, to chill their fish as soon as possible, how they can clean, so that by the time they buy it, it is in a good shape that can still take a very good price. So it's still a discussion between ourselves, public works, and the partners that we are bringing in. The issue that you raised in terms of the percentage of the allocation or the interval of the reviews, I must be honest on this one. The department has not been good in doing the reviews of the rights. So you've got somebody who's got a right for 10 years. They either misuse it or abuse it or whatever, And the last time and the first time there was a review was in 2009. It was in 2009. So that is the reason why Minister is establishing these two committees, the CAF, which is the Council of Advisory Forum, and the Fisheries Transformation Forum. So the function of the CAF, among other things, is to advise the department on fisheries management so that you kind of have a standard way of managing the rights holders and doing these reviews. So we are developing a scorecard, for instance. So if you are a rights holder, you will have a scorecard that will give a history of your utilization of your rights in year one, year two, if you are a good rights holder or you are a bad rights holder, and what then the department must do, either to revoke your rights or to issue you fines and everything. So all of that is going to become a package that the CAF is going to be responsible in developing it, because we recognize ourselves that we have been lacking in managing and really doing proper reviews of the rights that are being allocated. The percentage allocation to the youth, unfortunately, as acting teacher was saying, we don't have this information right with us now, but we are going to be able to provide, because we have done a baseline study, we have done a socio-economic study, and we can be able to even make a presentation. There's a ready presentation that we have put with regards to that. Coming to the issues raised by Honorable Van Dalen, and I will leave the rest Asanda to yourself. There was a question why we are not rolling out all of these at the same time, simultaneously, by Honorable Papa. He raised this question. Unfortunately, Honorable Papa, we may have to throw the things back to ourselves now as the collective, perhaps, and the honorable members of the portfolio committee, because there were stages whereby we had to halt the process because we had been requested by the portfolio committee to relook at this, reconsider this. There's been protests where people have been saying we have been left out of the process, and the department was requested to extend further. The period of consultation. We've been requested numerous times to extend further the appeals process. In KZN, we had a challenge of Amagaga Sochinjo, where we had to halt the process completely until we can solve those issues. So it has been a couple of issues that has been causing that we can't implement simultaneously. On the issues raised by Honorable Van Dalen, DM has indicated on those issues. The first one, I'll just respond directly to whether a study was done on the sustainability and what is viable, what is enough. The reality is that, and I've indicated this to the honorable members previously in my presentation, the last time the study was done was in 2003 by a professor at Rhodes University. And since that time, there was no other study that was done. This is also the reason why we are setting up this committee, CAF, that is going to be comprised of scientists, economists, lawyers, so that they really look at it, and including the true economic value of the fisheries sector in South Africa, because it is seriously under the pressure. DM has responded to the issues about poaching and DG. I'm not going to respond to that. The issue around the near-shore fishery, Honorable Van Dalen, and small scale, in terms of whether we are looking at collapsing these, what is the difference? Currently, these sectors are separated by gear time more than anything else. Is it the right way to do? I cannot say so. It is an old way that it has been done. And hence, we are saying the CAF is also going to be looking at that. Should we still classify the West Coast Rock Lobster fishery into a near-shore sector, a small-scale sector, and a commercial sector? How should this be classified? Do we have to use the same gear? Should we do away with the trap so that we look at the hook nets only? That's a combination of things that have to be looked at in a manner that can derive true information and how those things could be done. Last one I need to respond to, Honorable Chairperson. That's the reason why I was having my phone close to me, PCG, you can give. The issue, Honorable Madala, you have raised. Madala, sorry, thank you.
around the issue that we never responded to. I am sincerely sorry that we have not responded back to yourself when you were talking, because the fisheries managers responsible for this mandatory the embargo, which I think you have met, I quickly asked them why they have not responded. And their response is that, no, they have met with Mr. F. Hem many times to discuss this and with the affected people. And they say their last meeting was on the 2nd of August, 2017. They met with the group and they explained what had happened with respect to the error that was that had happened in the permit condition, and that they are now currently doing the permit reviews, because the permit review does not happen at any given time. There's management working groups where the permit conditions get discussed and get reviewed. So he says that the last roadshow they were in, they met with the group. He has got also a memo that they had responded, even inviting to Mr. F. Hem. That is the response. But as I say, I am sorry that the feedback did not come back in terms of indicating what was happening in this matter. I sincerely apologize.
Thank you. I want to thank the Honourable Ministers, the DG and the GDG, for responding to most of the questions that were raised by the Honourable Members. I will just touch on three Honourable Chair. Quickly, I just want to give figures with respect to the rights where that were issued in 2013, first 2013. But then we observed that those who were given those rights were not using them. So I've just got some figures. In live fish, we have around 44. White mussel is 18. Oyster is 25. Demeter shark is 5. 8 land line, 59 individuals. 8 land line, 20 companies. So in total, it's 171. But only 12, remember that the Section 28, so only 12 responded to those Section 28 letters. So what now we need to do now is to finalize the process and then revoke those rights. So I just wanted to start the Honourable Chair. And there is a, from Honourable Member Ponce, is there willingness from DAF to restore fishing communities' livelihoods? That was the first part that I jotted down. I would respond and say, indeed, Honourable Member, there is willingness, but more than that, there is an obligation for the department, which has a responsibility and a mandate to regulate the sector. So we have the willingness with that mandate to restore fishing communities and to also restore the trust that those communities have in the department. It's not proving easy, but we are working, we are collaborating, there is cooperation. And we are positive. We have already made some inroads in the other areas. Then the second part to the question from Honourable Sponsor is need to empower fishing communities. Yes, we are working because there are those deliverables that we must wait until some preliminary work is done. That is now the training of co-ops is one such, or the registration of successful people. But we managed to actually start interacting with potential partners. And one such interaction is at the regional level, where the Bengala Current Commission has actually employed in South Africa two officials. One is a project coordinator, the other one is a fisheries community-based officer on the climate change in the fisheries sector and marine aquaculture. So those two officials are currently based at the Department of Environmental Affairs, but the two departments will meet with a view of discussing and maybe
reaching an agreement that they should be based in the fisheries branch, because they will be working with the small scale fisheries management as well as the aquaculture and economic development. So that is the communities now, because there is a there's an officer who will be interacting more with communities on issues around climate change, issues of capacity development. So that is so small scale fisheries prominently there in that contract, and we'll soon be introducing those two officials. We already had a meeting with the regional project coordinator who's facing Shokokmon from the PCC. There is also an issue that was raised, Honorable Chair, with respect to communicating the progress that we seem to be making to the key stakeholders, that is now the industry of fishermen. We are reorganizing what we call institutional arrangements, and for example, recently in September, we have, through the instruction from the minister, established a task team that is chaired by the fisheries branch DDG that meets with the group that is now calling themselves the collective. So they say they represent all the associations from the various fishing coastal communities. What we are doing now is to now ensure that they are properly recognized. So we are working with them, and Abungle Ngongwa is our focal point person to work with their focal point person to make sure that they are fully recognized, so that we should be able to actually have continuous meetings with that collective. As you know, we have Fish South Africa. They would sometimes, from time to time, ask to meet with the minister. So we also want to also have such a structure so that we should be able. The challenge currently is that some of those people who represent the communities have vested interest in the processes that are still unfolding. So when they become or sense that they are not going to be successful, sometimes it does take, it does kind of influence their contribution. So we are still starting, but we are positive. As and when the process has been done, appeals have been completed, then we should be able to assist gain some momentum and be able to work more cooperatively and collaboratively with them. Lastly, Honorable Chair, is that a question that came from one of the Honorable Member Mandela, yes, I'm sorry. Is there a program at DAF for the unsuccessful applicants? We are working on that, because we also realize people do not stop being hungry because they've not been successful in the processes that we've been rolling out. So already we have been now encouraging through this focal task team so that they can give us the names, even those who need assistance for the appeals process, so that some people could not, it's understandable, I mean, it's human error, sign. It's like when you apply for a post and then you forget to sign your ZETT form. You belong like the exclusionary criteria. But those are cases that we will encounter. So we said we have interest in knowing those people, because there are alternative livelihoods, and also the issue of training. When we have trained, first and foremost, the co-ops, I'm sure that training should also be considered for beneficiation by those who have benefited or who have been deriving livelihoods from the fisheries, but they are unfortunate for one reason or another in terms of testing. They are right this time around. So I just wanted to clarify and comment on that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Just a quick one, Honorable Chair. We realize we have missed some issues. We just want to respond quickly to those. The constitutionality about rights allocation, section 25(1) of the constitution. Honorable Feldane, it has been tried and tested in the court. The Viking case, when we were at court, was basically testing the constitutionality of this, and we won it, because the Marine Living Resources Act is clear. The right you are given is not property right. And once it reverts, it expires. The day it expires, it reverts back to the state. And the state reserves a right to either reallocate to yourself or give it to somebody else. Try and test it once. Thank you. The second issue that we think we have missed I think Honorable Kapa asked the trend in the appeals, as we are dealing with the appeals, what is the trend and the issue of communication. I think you just dealt with the communication part. On the trend of the appeals, we are noticing, Honorable Kapa, that there is not much that has changed, the ones we have dealt with so far. And the advantage is that the department did not do the identification and the verification of the fishers. The communities themselves did that. So there was a structure and a committee that was set up that constituted community members themselves. Because they know each other. They know who is a fisher, who is not a fisher. So that process was done. However, we do realize that at some point, you'll find that some of the community members that were serving in this structure, they either that did not like me for the style of my hair or the size of my head or the color of my eyes, and then they excluded certain people on personal reasons. And those are the issues that we are dealing with. But we do not see much change so far on the verification that was done. But we anticipate that we may see some significant shift in communities that are not that cohesive in nature, that have got much more infighting and issues like that. Honorable Skin asked the issue about the KZN community on this arrangement with Amakata Association, if they have been informed, and the answer is yes, they have been informed. Not all of them are entirely happy with it, but they feel they may live with it if at least they don't see those faces before them, or they want to be part of the process. Is the fishing sector a happy sector? My answer is it will never be a happy sector, not at any given point in time. Fishing sector has moving targets all the time. When we deal with this one, you would think people are happy with this one. The next issue becomes the problem, the issue. And the issue we're dealing with again today is a classical example of that. We have a policy that has been consulted since 2008. The criteria was developed by the communities themselves, not by the department. Masifundis was driving the issue. Mr. Nasir can tell you that. Masifundis was basically driving the process together with the department. But the communities themselves were at the forefront of coming up with this criteria and everything. But the issue is that time has lapsed. Now there's people who are saying, let's revisit it. I'm not happy with that. So it will entirely not be a happy sector at all. We will keep on trying to do what we can do. The issue, again, we left out, Honorable Mandela, you are mentioning the issue around interim relief, that there are people who are saying that they've been, that's exactly what Asanda was responding to. We have asked those people to come so that we can treat them on a case-to-case basis, because we know that a net can miss some people. It is expected. Asanda has responded to those issues. The issue, last one, Honorable Chair, quickly, that Honorable Paul was talking to around, he mentioned in particular the Saldana area around where there's a depression and people are unemployed and there. I think, Honorable Paul, I'm not very sure of these incidences. It would be good for us to have an in-depth discussion, because we need to ascertain whether it is the case because they did not get the rights, or is it the case because the companies they were employed in did not get the rights, or those companies shifted their processing plants. For these companies, we have done that in Saldana, for instance, and in the PE, around PE, what's the place for egg inshore? Mossel Bay, around Mossel Bay. And Lambeth Bay, where companies, when they get the rights that employ people, they feel like it is too much going to a certain place for processing. They shift their fish elsewhere, and mostly they bring it to the metros. So those would be the things we need to find out on the case that you are talking about. Then we can be able to address the issue at its merits. Thank you so much.
One that will get a feedback on the work
as we're going to discuss the small-scale fishery policy implementation, the issue of the youth entrepreneurship, which has been elevated, will actually get a feedback and to continue on it. And then we'll get the feedback. I think as we're dealing with fishing industry in general, the issue of climate change and how it affects the APC and how departments will utilize the strategy on climate change to deal with the poverty eradication and particularly the communities in fisheries areas, the inclusion of small-scale fisheries into CASP. I think it should not be discussed outside the context of integrated financial models, because there is growers, forestry communities. It should be integrated into that, and as we get that feedback on integrated financial models for the support of small older farmers, it will improve the fisheries and the forest. But the one sector minister which will be for the other day is that the government has actually, the president has developed the ocean economy, but you are dealing with ocean economy excluding the small scale fisheries, which is a problem. It's for another day. That when you deal with ocean economy, you must take all the things in the ocean, including the small scale fisheries, because all those challenges that have been raised, if they have been taken there, which is the forum of other departments, can be dealt with those things. So can we, if that is for another day, so we I'm trying to summarize all the issues of the small-scale fisheries, because we want to see this the implementation does not happen with, like other things that we had before. It must be sustainable. And those are the things that next time when we present, don't exclude this thing, because we'll change your back again. let's go to the second item. Honorable Sekas, you want to leave?
Yes, sir.
To where? Close the item. We're going to another item. You'll make your remarks in that phase.
No,
the second one. Oh, no, you'll do it next time. Because I'll be provoking the other hands that are behind. 2020, good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, Acting DG and DDG, good morning. My name is Sue Middleton, and I'm going to be doing the presentation on our readiness and preparedness for the fishing right allocation process of 2020. The presentation outline, there's a slide on the list of acronyms used in the presentation. There's a background to the rights allocation process of 2020, which covers the LTRANC process, that stands for the long-term rights allocation process of 2005, FRAP 2013, FRAP 2015, the transfer policy, fish processing establishments, and then a couple of points on the commercial rights allocation process in 2020, where we stand.
In terms of the background, the honourable members will know that the act that governs the allocation of fishing rights in South Africa is the Marine Living Resources Act, and that Section 18 allows us to allocate fishing rights. You will also know that South Africa has 22 commercial fishing sectors, and that prior to 2005, rights were allocated on an annual or a yearly basis or maximum of 2 years at a time. And then for the first time in 2005, fishing rights in the 22 commercial sectors were allocated for longer periods of time, ranging from 8 years, 10 years, and 15 years. So those rights that were allocated for 8 years expired in 2013 and were reallocated in 2013. Then rights expired in 10 sectors in 2015, various times during 2015, and were reallocated, and we've just finished processing those 10 sectors, with the exception of Avalon, which I'll come to. And those rights have been allocated for 15 years, so will expire in 2031, and therefore those rights that are sub 15 are not part of the 2020 process. And then lastly, in 2005, there were 4 sectors that were allocated for a period of 15 years, and those are going to be reallocated in 2020. So, as I've said, in FRAC 2013, 8 sectors were allocated, and they expire in 2020. FRAC 15, we've just finished allocating in 10 sectors, with the exception of Avalon. They will not form part of 2020. In addition to the general policy on fishing rights allocation and the 22 sector-specific policy, the department has also developed a transfer policy in 2009. And this policy outlines the terms and conditions on which a right can be transferred from one right holder to another. And the reason we mention it here in this presentation is that it is our view that this policy, the transfer policy, needs to be reviewed as part of the 2020 process. So all the fishing sectors where rights will expire in 2020, we will review those policies, but we're going to include the transfer policy as well. Then we mentioned the fish processing establishments. As part of FRAC 15, we have started allocating long-term rights to operate a fish processing establishment. So you can have a right to operate a fish processing establishment, either land-based, a fish factory, in other words, or vessels at sea count as a fish processing establishment, and you need a permit or a right to operate those premises. So in 2015, we've started allocating long-term rights, 15-year rights, to operate a fish processing establishment. And these, unlike other rights, these are not, these are handled on a rolling basis, so you can apply at any time for a fish processing establishment, and your right is then granted for a 15-year period from the time of approval. So fish processing establishments, we will be dealing with periodically a couple of times every year from here on out. So the sectors that will be allocated in 2020. There are 12 of them. The first slot are those that were allocated as part of FRAP 2013. That's KZN prawn trawl, demersal shark, tuna pole line, hake hand line, lionfish, white mussel, oysters, and squid. And then the four sectors that were allocated for 15 years in 2005 are small pelagic, that's pilchard and anchovy, hake deep sea trawl, hake long line, and south coast rock lobster. And all in all, those are 12 sectors that will be allocated in 2020. The next slide looks at those 12 sectors. And then also looks at which of those four are small-scale species, and small-scale species as well as commercial. And so you'll see that hake handline, lionfish, white mussels, oysters, and squid will qualify as species that can be in 2020. Put into the small-scale fisheries basket, the basket of species. The third column looks at the stock status of those species that are to be allocated in 2020. And then the last column just looks at currently how many right holders there are in those sectors. This slide details the stock status. It's an executive summary of the stock status of these 12 resources. Well, no, of all the resources in South Africa, including some of the 12 that will be allocated in 2020. And just to anticipate the Honourable Member's question when he posed it in the first round of questions. The reason why in on the previous slide, and if I go back to the previous slide, where it indicates that some species are optimally utilized, others are depleted, and some are in danger. The reason for that, Honourable Member, is let's just take the first one. So the scientists do stock assessments on individual species. And what we're talking about, KZN prawn trawl, consists of more than one species. It's a sector. So the same applies for shark, demersal shark. There are many different types of shark species that form part of the demersal shark sector. And some of those shark species are optimally used and others are overexploited. So you get a range within a sector of healthy versus over optimally used or overfished species. Now we come to the our readiness for 2020, slide 10. Just to, the DDG has mentioned on a few times in her presentation that the Marine Living Resources Act allows for the establishment of a consultative advisory forum, a CAF, as well as a Fishery Transformation Council, the FTC. Neither of these bodies currently exist, and they haven't existed for as long as I've been in the department, which is over 10 years. So the minister has taken a decision that in order to promote transparency and also to make use of specialist and expert advice and input from the private sector that these bodies will be established. He has already called for nominations for the FTC, for the Fishery Transformation Council. We've gazetted a notice calling for the public to make nominations, and we will be gazetting a call for nominations for the CAF. The these nominations are going directly to the ministry and will be processed by the ministry. So that is the process that is currently underway. As I've mentioned, at the end of October, we finalized the allocations for FRAC 15, 2015, with the last one being the offshore West Coast Rock Lobster sector. The one exception where we haven't allocated is Avalon. There was a decision because of all the controversies and the difficulties and the overfishing and poaching in that fishery that we would not allocate. We would grant a further exemption and look at developing a turnaround strategy for that fishery. So FRAC 15 is dealt with the exception of Avalon and the appeals. So because we've now finished FRAC 15, the next step will, within the branch fisheries will be to do an internal review of FRAC 15, what lessons there are to be learnt, and there are many lessons. There's much room for improvement. What are the weaknesses, the successes, what can we do better? And we need to do this review while our experience of FRAC 15 is still fresh. Okay. So that is going to happen by the end of November, and that will assist us to improve the application forms, the policies, the fees that we need to review. These will be done early in the next year, in the next calendar year, in January and February. We will develop draft policies on all the 12 sector-specific policies that are to be reallocated, as I said, as well as the transfer policy. We will update and improve the application form, and we will have a proposal on the application fees and the grant of right fees that will be applicable for these 12 fishing sectors. Just to mention, I think members will know that the determination of the application fee and the grant of right fee for these 12 sectors is a concurrent mandate between Minister of DAF and the Minister of Finance. So we will have to consult with the Minister of Finance on the applicable fees. By the end of January, we will finalize a roadmap. In other words, all the activities and the steps that need to be undertaken as part of FRAC 2020 with time frames, delivery dates, and responsible officials. And I'm sure Honourable Chairperson will be happy to present this roadmap in the next calendar year for your scrutiny. Thereafter, we will embark on a public consultation process where we present, we take the 12 policies, or there will be 13 policies, the proposed fees and the application forms to members of the public. We do road shows. And precedent in FRAC 13 and FRAC 15 is that we will do road shows in all 9 provinces, including the inland provinces, but with more extensive venues and coverage in the coastal provinces. And that public consultation process will commence in February, and we would hope to gazette the final policies, taking into account the comments received from the public, by mid-year. And at the moment, as we speak, we are looking at ensuring that we have the necessary capacity for FRAC 2020, a permanent FRAC team. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation, Honourable Member. And that was
presentation.
Thank you.
collaborative efforts with all the enforcement agencies in the seas for you to fight that poaching challenge. So collaboration doesn't mean that it's abdicating them not to be their responsibility. Say you have those that are like the Navy, which has got the particular skill in the water. So I think that's what they are saying. Yes, and the ocean economy that was presented in the last meeting actually presented that, Honorable Sandal, if you remember. Honorable Papa?
Thank you, Chair. I have only one question on the internal review process. One is that where they say they have to analyze the lessons then from the South Coast team. Now, just get the when the results from this analysis would be known and be useful and be made. And then secondly, still on the same question, I'm worried about the tendencies I know in the public sense, but now there is a commitment here that some work will be done and completed in December, January. But if it is possible, it would be very good for the department. But at the same time, I would have liked to know when you go for this review of policy process, when it started, is on the basis of things you have done, or what is actually the rationale for the, or the basis for the review? Can you check?
Thank you very much, LG. We wish to welcome the and thank Mr. Sorotan for the presentation, Chair. It was very, very short but very exciting. Chair, my first question relates to the establishment of the carbon and the FTC. I have seen a press statement with regard to carbon, but the press statement was not accompanied by a application form. I'm not quite sure what the procedure would be. The press statement also does not indicate what is the deadline for nomination. I would appeal, especially also in relation to the other one that will still, the Transformation Council will still come, that the ministry must share those efforts with the committee. You know, we don't need to come to a specific portfolio committee meeting for it, but when the minister does publish it, gazette it, then you can just share it with the committee, Chair, so that we are also in the know. Chair, I agree with Honorable Kappa around the internal review process, because I would be very much interested to learn what has been the weaknesses. You know, that would be a very, very good thing to share that outcome with us, Chair. So my following last question relates to whether the department, or when every LPs, are there a particular meeting with all rights holders and an explanation about the rights that they have been allocated to them, so that there is complete understanding, you know. Chair, I want to give you the biggest example. DNSA, he is grew up next to the sea. I grew up very far from the sea. I was born in Peru. We then moved to Prince Albert in the Karoo Sea. You can put a fishing rod in my hand and say, I am not going to do anything with it. But I do not know what to do with it. Now, this is a ridiculous example. When a client applies for a right and I'm awarded the right, is there a process in the department that I'm taking through this? If I would, for example, need resources, I broke,
I have the right. What must I do now? You know, I'm talking about processes and mechanisms that prevent the rights being not used by me and being retaken away by the department. I also am very much cautious, Chair. I know there's this thing, and I know the Minister has spoken about it the last time, that the issues of a partnership between right holders and those that have the resources. Now, this is a very, very unfair relationship. Because what happened out there, if I have the right, I go to you, you give me 200 rand money from the bank, and then that alienates the right in all practical terms from myself. That is not empowering me at all. I'm asking the reason for the issue of sitting down with rights holders to ascertain that. I know this department have a limited budget, they have limited capacity, but as you correctly say and have said, that we must then look at a collaborative approach. As DM spoke about engagement with small business development, and of course there are state finance institutions that can also come to the party and assist, would be interested in this. Even with regard to training, there's a lot of CTAF, sector education and training authorities, that will in actual fact assist in providing the necessary kind of training for those entities, so that when they're being allocated right now, I'm in essence would be able to feed my family not only for the 15 years time, but I will put myself in a position that I'm much better when the right expires. But more important, Chair, this is the last thing, Chair.
No.
The issue of collaboration.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, in fact, I got a call, as you saw, I went out just now. The Western Cape did a research, or not research, they went on oversight and they had community meetings regarding the abalone poaching situation, and that document was tabled in Parliament. She actually asked me, how far are we, where are we with that document? Because I really think, Chair, maybe we need to take get hold of that document and do another meeting regarding that, because we will not be able to help and assist with the basket if we keep on talking faster. One of the problems that we are sitting with, and that is the resources that are being taken out of the sea without anyone having rights to fish that, our scallions fishing, and we don't have, I really think we need to get hold of that document. I think it was 86, we need to get it and see what is going on, and then make this call the department and the other departments together so that we can see what was going on. Chairperson, my question was just around the whether the department is based on social economic studies. I know it's not linked specifically to the second half of the presentation. The point is, if we want to do the flat allocation and do it right, we need to see at the long-term sustainability, if we are helping communities to get out. I want to know if any baseline study was done, will that influence your flat allocation for 2020 or not? Or what is the only criteria that you take for that allocation?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Kane touched partly on one question I wanted to raise, whether the allocation in 2020 will be driven by any experiences that they gauged from any socioeconomic studies and the impact on communities especially. And also, I don't think poaching is our real concern. Those people take fish to survive, and it's not like the car that you buy, Honorable Van Dalen. That fish belongs to them. It really does. They've got a right to it. And this is how they survive with their family. So my real concern is those people who are trawling our waters, how do we police that? right? Never mind, this is a really small fry, you know. And also, I don't know, I'm going to get cheap and the money with not for those poachers. I mean, I support them, I support those fishing communities, they must poach. But internationally, the cost of
paying on the point of order.
Yeah.
Chair, I don't think at this committee we must sit here and members say I support the vouchers.
Of course I support it.
Chair, I don't think that is the right thing to do.
No, I'm not going to be I can't help you, Chairperson. You must help yourself here. Those people are dying and they must help themselves.
No.
Honourable
Professor, suppose you don't understand the policies themselves.
Those policies are denying people a livelihood.
No, there is. If a person wants to fish for eating, there is a process that you must just go and get that 5 fish.
Okay.
Because this committee announced that they support poachers. What about those that is not in that community? And majority of people who are stealing our fish is not those communities. Because communities take one or two or three. So, and we cannot... there are people who use vessels taking thousands.
But those are the very same people I think we should police.
Yes.
Not these people that are just helping themselves.
No, I'm saying our people must be told that there is a process. They must just apply to go and get 5 fish in the sea.
But like I said, the real policing should be there. Those people who are trawling our deep waters and stealing the fish. But this is small fry here along the coast. Now, internationally, the going rate for abalone, perlamoon, $80 a kilo. It's a lot of money. China produces 150,000 tons of abalone via aquaculture. How is our aquaculture program getting along, which could really alleviate the strain on our marine resources and also assist us in addressing those issues of employment opportunities? So are we focusing on our aquaculture and developing that aquaculture space? Because we, unlike most countries, most of our fish, only 1% of our fish comes from aquaculture, whereas other countries, up to 50%. So are we developing the aquaculture space to alleviate the strain on our marine resources? Thank you, Chairperson.
Does 2020 trust visit going to help us to create jobs in the sector and the contractors are going to tie with the allocation, the creation of jobs, the intention of government, the creation of jobs as we implement these policies? Secondly, they depleted, they heavily depleted and other things. For me to make sense of it is to read the map. At some point to get these scientists who produce those things, so that we ask questions. Because I don't make a sense of this document. That's the information that we appreciate, but it would be very helpful for us to understand what goes into those issues. I think that there is something to go into the basket of small scale fisheries. Are we preparing those communities as we prepare for this allocation, so that you don't come back and say you are preparing them outside the whole process? There must be
part of the process and get their permit and arrive in time like all those other people and the support that will go with that. The last thing that the issues of processes done. There was an issue in the previous presentation on people get rights in particular areas and now lead to well processing other areas. How are we going to deal with that? Because it should not be, because those people who are, they are fish, I think, as Honorable Paul is saying, yes, it's their right, the fish belongs to the people of South Africa, but the state holds them on behalf of the people. So, but how then do we protect those people? That you've given somebody a right to fish, that person leaves the same people to another area and create jobs somewhere when the people in those areas, they are suffering. So how do we balance that within the front itself? You can then respond. And the last thing on the poaching part, at some point you said you submit, I hope maybe I've left, I would have missed it, that the strategy within the ocean economy of dealing with that. You said you submit, if we can get that document, so that we have that document on how the monitoring and civilian with collaboration with other departments is working, and what do we have in fighting the current threat? Because it's very much important. We have necessary tools to fight crime. So if we can get that, unless I've missed it, but I recall I've never seen that document, the strategy there, if we can have that. You can respond, Minister, and your team.
Thanks. I will only deal with one area. I think we need an understanding that when the answer is given to the fact that there are different processes in dealing with poaching, it does not for a minute, Honorable Pandale, create a view that says we're saying in the department poaching is not an area we should be concerned about. I think we have been apprehending a number of vessels. But once a vessel is in the domain of the Department of Justice, your act ends there. You can't force them that because this vessel may have been found with one fish or five, therefore this is the preferred action or decision taken on that basis. We need more of us that we can do the department. Hence we speak of the police involvement. Hence we speak of winning the people in those communities to work with us. Hence we speak of making sure that those who are found in the possession of these national resources are dealt with accordingly. We understand the role we play, but poaching is not by, it takes different forms. I will not try to enter into the space of whether fish belongs to those who have poached it, because they have poached two and sold one to the honorable member. Hence, he could afford it because it gets cheap. I won't enter into that area. But I'm saying that if we deal with poaching, I agree with you, is one of the challenges this country faces with. It is a global phenomenon. There are, even in sub-Saharan region or in the SADC region, a debate that seeks to make sure that we can use our facilities to assist our neighboring countries such that these illegal fishing processes can be dealt with. That needs cooperation, not only with the neighboring, but even within the country. Justice must come on board, the police must come on board, the army sometimes must come on board as they hold the different, that is what, by the way, is the takes of the marine, of the ocean economy. when we speak of ocean economy, we speak of all those areas, that there should be a coordination of surveillance and make sure that we improve in the capacity to detect such. And I think, broadly speaking, the aim is the same, that people along the coastal area should have life out of the ocean. But as well, they must be able to understand the training to see that what will keep us going is the sustainability of what. But doing that means that we must work together. And I'm appealing that when we debate these issues, we need not be saying that, because in my view as a country we have got a lot of work to do. That also includes the issue that Honorable Folta raised beside the rights of those who are in coastal areas, which are not conferred on them by law. In the issue of aquaculture, what role can it play to alleviate the dwindling species and also create another form of already there's a lot of aquaculture farms that have been built. But because of the cost factor, we are still trying, because you need the movement of land to make land available, you need the movement of deer to make sure that those processes are done on time. But we need investors, but also working with the local people so that they participate in those processes. I think the question the chairperson has raised is what I think in the coming processing. I agree with her very 100% that you can fish in an area, but you change your processing somewhere else because you are transporting jobs. You are making those people more poor. And we need, and I would not even promote this venture of saying we must give rights to vessels. We need to do deep sea processing because in a fish you lose a number of components. You may not look for the skin, you may not look for the intestines, you may think that they are embedded and you throw them away and dig in the ocean. We need to promote that. We need to ensure that part of the rights that are coming now is to find a way that we promote local participation of our people, either through process in as processing employees or in one way or another. I think the question that Honorable Van Dalen has raised has been the issue of what happens to right owners who do not use their rights. Do those rights become available for new entrants? As we, I'm sure the answer will come.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think it was Mr. Mapang who raised the issue of depletion. You have raised the other portion yourself of scientists dealing with this matter. But it's an international trend that the world is beginning to eat more farmed fish than the wild fish. So South Africa will have to follow that trend. But needs a lot of preparation for that in terms of science, as you say. Firstly, do we have the correct information? We start there. Because you might go there and be told that this species is depleted, you increase what is anyway optimal. So that should be a correct information. And then we go for the second one, the skilling. Because there's a lot of skill to do that in grow fish. They've just send five of those students in Scotland to be fish doctors, so there will be six after that. So we are not going to run farms all over South Africa with fish doctors of fish, otherwise you will find them upside down, those fish, one day, all of them in the farm, if you don't prepare for it. So we need to prepare a lot of skills around that. But the international trend is that go to France, especially in Europe, they are big on farming the fish to deal with depletion of this matter. I think we have to do that. Including the information that maybe it would be nice just to listen to scientists at one time. Even the methodology, well, not scientists and all that, but even the methodologies understand why how many there were these fish, how many there are now. Just give us some form of understanding. I don't want to go back to this point. But Mr. Van Der says he's worried about Van Dale. So he's worried about the point that we don't take. I'm worried about him refusing to understand. What he reads there is not crime issues. And not crime issues what you're reading there. It's an instruction what this department that monitoring compliance. There is no compliance of crime. We can't monitor the compliance of crime because pushing is crime. So we can't monitor and say, what are we monitoring there? That the crime is compliant. It cannot be. You monitor compliance within you. One other thing that that guy doesn't listen. We sit here and listen to him, but when you speak, he doesn't listen.
Honorable President, can you not interact with my members? Honorable Fandan, can you give them time to respond and listen so that you could. No, Honorable Fandan, if you are not happy with the response, we still have an opportunity to follow up. So for you to interact with the response, it doesn't help the meeting. Deputy Minister, don't interact with my members when they are not in line with the agenda. Let's proceed.
But Chair, I'll ask that you are also here in your local protection.
Yeah, I'm protecting you to say that Honorable Sandal must not interact with the U.S.
You can't give all the time.
Honorable Sandal, please.
I was speaking to my colleague on this side.
It's not in the house where the working Palestinians, what do they call it?
Bouncers.
No, not bouncers. You're allowed to speak but not raise your voice. In the meeting, members of the committee have to listen to the report so that they can be able to follow up whether the answer has been responded. So I'm just saying, let's listen to the response so that we're able to satisfy whether the questions that we have asked have been responded. But if you don't listen, you will then have a problem because you will want me to protect when you are speaking, and I won't do that.
Thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, this act instructs DAF to do a few things, mostly in terms of prevention, preventative measures, your monitoring, your compliance. Compliance goes with keeping the law, which means we give you the permit, you get more species than that, we catch you to say you're supposed to have compliance. But if you go in the middle of the night, you go to harvest abalone and all that thing, we're not going to look there at your compliance, but because there is no law that allows you to do that, so you can't be compliant. You become a criminal. The law and the constitution of this country allocates the fight against crime to a certain department. And that department is called Department of Safety and Security, that is run by the South African Police Service, SAPS. Hence, I said in the previous life, there were measures. Maybe we need to collaborate to sit down with the South African police to work on those things. That is a call. But we are not going to go there and chase crime. We will chase compliance, monitoring, prevention, and all. And then, even again, he's shaking his head there. Protect me from that man. No, I'm answering him. I must look at him.
DM, the issue is that you don't proceed as long as it's not not interested in your answer, but you are responding to the question, and will honorable members are listening.
Thank you. I'm not proceeding. It's not helping talking to him.
No, you're not talking to him. You're talking to DM. You are talking to us. It's important for us.
Well, thank you. I'm simply saying the crime is taken by South African police, not only on DAF. For instance, just take the bank. It's their responsibility to comply with transfer of the money from A to B and all that. Hence, they have their security. But when it comes to cash heist and things like that, South African police comes in. To a certain extent, everybody will have an issue trying to limit that thing. But once it passes that line, for instance, if we catch those people, we still push, we still take them to the South African police. We still take them there. We don't have courts, we don't have magistrates, we don't have prisons to keep them there. So it becomes a crime issue that together we work with them. Even international, as it was explained, that when these things, they cross our borders, they go to Vietnam, they go, hawks come in. It's not DAF that chase them there. We work with them in terms of information, but if they come in, the security agencies of the country will come there. We are working together to prevent where the law says lawyers, right, compliance and all that. But once the crime comes, the South African police, yes, we work with them, but it becomes their responsibility. What we are requesting, Chairperson, is that it should be the responsibility of all of us. Unlike my comrades, they will encourage people to go push it. They'll push your house one day. So let's work together. Where the law says to us, this is your instruction, but where we go beyond that, we work with those agencies that are responsible for that matter. What we can say here, Chairperson, that is the matter is serious, especially this upper load. The matter is serious. Maybe we need to take a little bit politics out of it and deal with the issue as South Africans. Because it's quite a lucrative something. I don't know, I've never eaten it, I've never been in the restaurant where it has been served. But I'm told the figures, I don't know where you get them, but they're scary figures. if you pay $80 for that, that's a hell of a thing. Which means we are losing. As South Africa, we are losing big. Not only that, even the collection of tax, we are losing in many ways. So South Africans, let's work together on this one and pull everybody together, including the members, including the agencies, including the government, so that we protect what seems to be very lucrative and what should be the value for South Africans. That should be my call.
Honorable Chair, on a quick basis, allow me to introduce the issues around aquaculture and call on Mr. Bedemani Simudi, who is the Chief Director of Jozuzu Aquaculture, just to paint a picture in terms of how are we doing from an aquaculture point of view based on our operation by Kisa. And then I'll hand over to the DDG and Chief Director just to deal with the technical issues that arose from the first 2020 discussion in that order. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, honorable members. We are going to share the responses, myself and Ms. Middleton. The first one, honorable Maphanga, I'll respond to that one. You mentioned the issue of the southern bluefin tuna depletion and any plan of recall. This is one of the very interesting parts because South Africa does not set or do the analysis of the stock of the southern bluefin tuna.
That's why we are part of the SPT, which is the Commission for the Conservation of Southern Bluefin Tuna, and RFMO, we've just fully acceded to. So there are scientists there who do the stock assessment, then the commission jointly with the member countries then decide on harvest strategies. An interesting part, I think, which links to what the DM was talking about and Honorable Chair, that it would be good to hear the scientists on this. An interesting part on the Southern Bluefin Tuna, although it was rated to be in that state, last year the commission rated it that it's in a good state, and that's why the Southern Bluefin Tuna allocation for South Africa increased from 150 tonne to 470 tonne, and other countries as well got an increase on it. So there's this big contestation globally between what science is and which group of scientists say what it is. So I think the issue really of really getting the scientists and getting our service managers together to really talk about this. They even established the platform they call a dialogue between scientists and managers to really talk about this issue. So the latest statistics is that the SBT stock is improving. But of course, there's a group of science corner that says the stock is in a bad state. The other question I'll respond to, the rest will be done by Honorable Madela. On the FTC, the establishment of CAF, we would gladly share this gazette. The gazette for FTC has gone out already. We can submit it in writing to the honorable members just to share on it. It closes on the 11th of November. The CAF has not yet opened. We are just waiting for a few things. So that we can gazette that one as well, but we can gladly share these issues. We have meeting with the rights holders. When people get rights, we have meetings with rights holders. We do road shows each and every year to meet them, to listen to what they say and everything. But unfortunately, we have not really done assistance as a department. When we give you a right and you have never fished before, we've never taken it as a responsibility to say, let's see how we can assist you. That has been a failure from the part of the department, and perhaps saying our role is just giving the right. You know, we may not necessarily be coaching you on other things, but we do realize there's a big need for us to go a step further in assisting people or pointing them at least to the right direction if it can be us providing that. We are currently doing that with the host market rent sector. The people that are new entrants now, we have done so with the Hake Inshore sector. So we are beginning to do that. The issue around the upper loan document, we have not seen this document, Honorable Chair. We would gladly, if there is a document that was developed, gladly look at it and interrogate it and see how we can. But I think DM has responded very well on that one. The baseline study, Honorable Sting, she asked, I think it's the same question that was asked, and we have responded to that issue. And the last portion I'll respond to is the issue, or the last two, Honorable Porter, the impact on communities you are talking about and how the allocations are done. And again, this is the reason why the department and minister is establishing the Fisheries Transformation Forum and a council advisory forum, so that these people gather the necessary needed information, socio-economic information, what kind of information must we gather, where should we get that data, is going to be credible data, how do we utilize that data, so that when you do the allocation of rights, you do it in a meaningful way than how it has been. The issue around the trawlers, I do agree with you on this one. That indeed there are trawlers that are further out there that are depleting the ocean. That is a fact. Some are international illegal vessels. Some are right holders in the country that are fishing legally but overfishing. It's a very big challenge how we monitor the catches. And we are beginning to have a discussion in terms of how we will monitor this. Previously, we used to have what we called independent observers, fishery observers on board. So each and every vessel that would go out at sea would have to have an independent observer on board, or a couple of them, that will look at what is happening. Countries that are advanced are having cameras, all vessels fitted with cameras, so that when you are on land in the office, you can actually monitor the catches. When fish lands on the deck, you can actually even see the weight of that fish, the species that are in that fish. So this is the conversation we are beginning to have. First, to bring back the observer program so that there are observers on board. And again, when you have the observers, you have to make sure that the observers themselves don't get bribed, that they get to record what is done. So it's a whole lot of things that we are looking at indeed to establish this so that we can make sure that everything is monitored. The issue of aquaculture you are raising comparing to China, you will be happy when I tell you that we started farming abalone in South Africa in the late 90s from 10 tons. Last year, we produced 1,300 tons of abalone, farmed abalone. Abagold is now expanding further to the east side in Kucha and Port Elizabeth, and there are plans of further expanding that. So we are basically looking at intensifying that. The presentation that was done the last Tuesday we were here, that was done by Asanda on Operation Pagisa, we presented a slide of the program we are doing with Rhodes University of a reseeding program whereby the small abalone gets farmed in a controlled environment and we plant back those units back to the wild, and we've proceeded close to 1 million units already into that program. So part of the rehabilitation program into the wild stock that is happening. The last one I respond to, Honorable Chair, is the issues you raised. The issue of job creation is very critical, and you are linking it to the issue of people closing the processing plant. In the last allocation that we did, we coined a term called LED, Local Economic Development, and we were awarding companies that have not closed down their operations where they got rights. That is why a number of companies ended up seeing a huge reduction in their allocation because they have moved processing away from Mossel Bay, in particular for the Hague Inshotrol. Those companies took a very big knock. So we looked at that, and indeed in the next policies that we're going to be looking at, Honorable Chair, we're going to be looking at the issue of local economic development. Somebody must have a factory and the processing where they do their catching. The issue of the basket and abalone and processes, absolutely, as BM has indicated, we want to be looking at a holistic view in terms of how we do the allocation and how we do the monitoring and compliance of this. And the issue around the ocean governance, it's a lab that exists within Operation Pagisa. We presented this as well in the last meeting when we were here. And there's many successes that we see. Despite the fact that there's still challenges, we have seen significant successes. We've seen people convicted. We've seen people getting arrested. There is a collaboration that is happening with, of course, the CMC. We need to intensify and really come up with how we are going to increase that. And I will leave the rest of the issues to my colleague.
Thank you, Chappas. Thank you, DDG. I'll deal with three issues fairly quickly. The first is, Honourable Pandalan, your question on lionfish. I think had two parts to it. The first one was you wanted to know of the 95 rights holders for lionfish, how many were existing rights holders and how many were new entrants. We don't have that information on us at the moment. We would need to go back to the office and analyze that, and we'll certainly provide you with that information along with the other information that we've promised. I think the point, though, wanting to understand the performance of new entrants is an important point that we need to look at, not just for lionfish, but possibly for other fisheries as well, other sectors. The second part of your question, Honourable Van Darden, was why did we only allocate lionfish for 8 years? And the short answer to that is all eight sectors that were reallocated in 2013 were reallocated for periods of 8 years. From 15, we took a decision to allocate for 15 years rather than 8 years, precisely because of some of the points you've made, that a right allocation process is a very expensive and tedious process for the department, and it takes years of a lot of effort and a lot of money. So we would prefer where it makes sense, where the stock status is not under threat, to allocate for longer periods. Honourable Member Krapa, you asked about the internal review. We don't really have a model yet. We need to develop this, what is going to go into the internal review. From off the top of my head, I think there were a lot of officials involved in the process in the different sectors who have different views of what could be done to improve everything from policy ambiguity. There were a lot of questions in the applications form that were unclear or vague that we need to tighten up. So there are lots of technical things that we need to improve. In addition to that, all rights holders were given an opportunity to comment once we published the provisional list and the provisional results. And we received thousands of comments from rights holders or applicants that range from how things could be improved to things they didn't understand. We will analyze all of those. In addition, we also had an independent process observer, PricewaterhouseCoopers, who were part of the entire process as independent monitors and independent observers. And they are busy producing a report per sector, so we will certainly take their comments and recommendations on board. It is our intention, broadly, to have that a document, the outcome of the review ready by the time we close for Christmas, so by the middle of December. There are a whole lot of things around Track 15 that we want to tie up in readiness for 2020, and we've given ourselves December the 22nd as a deadline for those. So certainly thereafter we can make the report available. And that will guide us in our review of the policies, the 12 policies, the 13 policies, and the application. Just a quick comment, Chairperson, and the DM also touched on it. I should have mentioned when I did the presentation that graph that was in the presentation on the stock status, that's a sneak preview of an executive summary of a stock status report that is about to be produced now in December, in November, in readiness for World Fisheries Day on the 21st of November. So that report, which comes out, I think it's every 2 years, DDG, is going to be ready in November, and that'll go into more detail, more explanation of how they arrived at their conclusions. But I think certainly in the next calendar year, it might make a lot of sense to have a presentation on that stock status report that is at the printers as we speak. Thank you.
Honourable members, any follow-up question? We have 20 minutes. Or you wanted to respond on
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I had requested that we have that the management would be responsible for the research that to be highlighted around the aquaculture. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. you very much, Honourable Chair.
Okay. All right. I'll just touch on some of the key issues and the key progress on Operation Pakistan, Ocean's Economy, Aquaculture. And globally, all fisheries products is about 160 million tons, of which 52% of that is from aquaculture. If you look at the situation at home, our fishery is about 700,000 tons, and aquaculture in 2014 before the ocean's economy was about 4,000 tons. Hence, a business case was made that there's a huge potential if you look at what's happening internationally for aquaculture to grow domestically. Just a quick highlight since the launch of Operation Pakistan by the President in October 2014. So far, we have about 690 million rand investment in terms of aquaculture, of which 237 comes from the government. The total jobs since 2016 is about 1,800 jobs, new jobs created, and the growth in terms of production is about 3,500. So you can realize that in less than 3 years, we have almost doubled the production from the initial 4,000. Now we have an extra 3,500, which now we've got about 7,500, which is a tremendous growth indeed. Since the Operation Pakistan, whereby we had registered 24 projects that needed assistance from government, today we've got about 36 projects on our list, and we continuously encourage stakeholders to come and register with us so that we can block whatever challenges they have for the implementation of the project. And this is about 17 new projects that have been accepted. One of the key issues that was raised during Operation Pakistan was that the legislative regime is not supportive towards the industry to grow, and it was suggested that we develop a new bill or specific legislation for aquaculture. This legislation has made some progress. We have gone through the NEDLAC processes that were completed in June this year, and currently the bill is under discussion at the clusters for the DGs, the economic cluster. There's also one very important initiative that we have embarked on, which is the strategic environmental assessment, the partnership between us and the Department of Environmental Affairs. The idea is to proactively identify areas that environmentally we could do aquaculture without us having to do an environmental impact study. So this project is almost complete. So once we are done in those areas, there will be no need to do EIA in those particular areas. So that will save time, will also save a cost for the investor. Another important initiative that we are doing is we are proactively doing environmental impact studies in some of the key areas, pending the outcome of the strategic environmental assessment. We have got two areas in the Eastern Cape, one in KZN and one here in the Western Cape. And we are still to go further inland in areas such as Limpopo. We have identified Nandoni Dam as a potential area for tilapia farming. We also have an interdepartmental authorizations committee that includes all the government departments that have got a role to play in terms of authorization for aquaculture. This committee has been functional for the past year now, and so far it's been performing quite well. Another important aspect for aquaculture, because it was a fairly new area which was not understood by the investors and the financial agencies, so we have established a aquaculture development fund working group. This working group includes entities such as the IDC, that is the Industrial Development Corporation, National Employment Fund, Department of Trade and Industry, and all the key players in terms of financing for aquaculture. So the approach is to receive applications and they get scrutinized by those agencies, and we fund and prepare a package pair project that would be suitable for that particular project.
Mm-hmm.
And that working group has also been going on for the past year or so. I think another aspect is that if we are to seriously grow aquaculture, the issue of capacity becomes critical and very important. And I think the DM also mentioned that we currently have about 5 vets that went to University of Stirling in September this year. University of Stirling, we do have a partnership with them, MOU between DAF and University of Stirling. Internationally, the University of Stirling is known as the home of aquaculture because there was such a huge capacity for aquaculture, and I think it's quite a good thing that we had an agreement with them. So we will continue to train. Even next year, we're going to send more people again. Beginning of January, we're going to send 3 more technicians just for a short-term, 3-month intervention. And again, for the next academic year, that starts September, we're going to be sending more people. Again, to develop the capacity, we are looking at our own agricultural colleges. We are at the moment busy developing a curriculum so that those that graduate in diploma or certificates can have a stream where they can also specialize in aquaculture. So we are going to be tackling it at all levels. In the Free State Summit, we have the aquaculture demonstration center that does training, research, demonstration of various technology, hatchery, and so on. And we could continuously train private people who are interested in aquaculture, government officials. We have high school learners that come there during the holidays also to get exposed in aquaculture. We are also looking at, we are busy now doing a feasibility to say, can we have another training center, either in KZN or Eastern Cape, that will specialize with marine issues, because the one in Harib deals only with the freshwater aspect. And once that feasibility is done, we'll then establish that particular center. One last point, honorable members, is around the marketing, because the issue is that once we have produced all this fish, where and how we're going to market it, we, together with the Department of Trade and Industry, working on a strategy on how to market the sector as a whole and how to market the products that come from the various aquaculture producers. We have also managed over the past few years to unlock new markets in areas such as Taiwan. They're interested in our oysters, and we have already started exporting there. And again, we are talking to the EU so that some of the products can go there. Area DCM had an audit from there. I think one of the chairperson does a high level summary that we can provide for our culture. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is the mayor of Lisbon, honorable members. Now back to Juan, which must close the meeting. I think what we must look at department as we deal with those issues that we are agreeing on should happen, it should then become the briefing as you come, because the briefing should be continuous until the allocation. But I think it's important, again, to have that strategy on monitoring surveillance, how to fight poach, should come to members, and so that we can interact and see if our inputs can help. And the collaboration efforts of the research itself of the ocean economy was not actually been briefed around that, because you see, I'm not a scientist, but my knowledge says that this depletion should actually go in line with the environment, but at the same time taking cognizance of the status of the people around those environment goes alone, we'll have a very serious problem. And as we'll then go to interact, we'll appreciate a support that interacts as scientists, but that our own view in terms of the status themselves talking into cognizance of the people staying in those areas, because it's very important for us as a community. And which will then include even the recovery plan of those depleted pieces. And they must have a time frame. You know, one of my previous understanding on this thing of NPA, I thought it's a process where you close the area for nurturing and recovery, and at some point you open. But in South Africa, this closed. It's closed forever, and I don't make sense out of it. Maybe I need to be educated around that. That as you put this protection, is it not for nurturing? And as the recovery has happened, then you open and close other areas. But in South Africa, the closing continues. It's increasing on a daily basis without opening. And you even look into the environment on conservation, in what you call them, the tourism thing. Every day they're increasing this protection. At what point is it going to be open to our people? Because it's there. So I don't think we need a situation where people will remind that, Papati, so you have given the opportunity to hold this thing on our behalf, but we are not bringing them back. We don't benefit. So I think it is important to balance environment and people themselves are staying in those areas and for them to benefit their own resources. So I think it's important that we have that recovery plan which actually at some point open, not like that we see, it doesn't open, it's closed forever. There must be a recovery plan, whether for 5 years, for 10 years, and we must be told what is it that you are going to do for those places to be recovered, so that our people can then come, can have access to those. I think that's in summary what we must continue to do. I think those that are doing it themselves will get feedback as you continue. Thank you very much, Minister, for coming and your team. We are now released. Honorable panel, we will wait for the visitors to go out and then we members.
And we have a meeting at 1. I have a very important meeting at 1 o'clock.
Well, it's time to 1. The meeting ends at 1 now.
I have another meeting at 1. Very important.
I don't understand. Department, can you go quickly, please? Honourable members, as we go out next week, Honourable Folter, we'll continue with our briefing. Next week we're supposed to have, in terms of the old program, we're supposed to go to Kumala, but we discovered that we're passing out the finance committee's report. Division of Revenue is going to be adopted next week. So we'll not go to Shumalana. But instead we'll then put the president to come and brief us on the food security and the operation Pakisa on agriculture and land next week. And we have scheduled the Mpumalanga for the 21st of November. But there is a challenge that was being pulled again at the committee to present our report on the Winterberg Act, but we are still going to negotiate with programming to shift the